listening to The Nature Fix from Out There. I'm Willow Belden.
I'm Becky Jensen.
And I'm Angus Chen.
This is our advice segment, where we use wisdom from the outdoors to help solve your most pressing personal questions. How's your morning so far?
Good. I went surfing this morning.
Whoa, really? Already?
Yeah. Yeah, I left at like, I got up at like 6, went down to Rockaway Beach, and went surfing. Yeah, it was nice. It was like, you know, the wind was offshore, which is, you know, it keeps the waves nice and clean. And it was like maybe 3 to 4 feet tall with the waves.
And is that for in your mind, is that ideal?
We're landlocked.
It's a nice wave. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's ideal. I would like maybe an extra foot of height, a little bit more power. I like 5 feet. 5 feet would be ideal.
So I have to ask, like, I'm just picturing you like riding the subway with your surfboard. Is that what you do?
Yeah, that's what I did this morning. But
that's up here.
Yeah, it's yeah. Nice. Sometimes people talk to you because they see that you have a surfboard. But today I was started talking to this guy out in the lineup. We were just like waiting for waves, and then he lives like just a few blocks away from me, so he gave me a ride home in his car.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Becky, how are you?
Well, I was gonna say today we have a really similar kind of adventure planned. My son Dane is racing his cardboard boat on a lake for physics class today.
Wait, a cardboard boat sounds not watertight.
No, it's not. It's like he's got a whole team. So there's a team of four. And for months, they've been building this cardboard boat with like kind of these rules of physics for water displacement. And they could only use Elmer's glue. Huh. So that, it's water soluble.
Oh what? My gosh.
He's not going to be in the boat, right?
Yes.
Oh.
Three of them are in the boat. His job, he says, I'm the ballast, you know, and he's going to be bailing, and the other two are going to be using the paddles, and so they get judged on if they can make it 100 feet in the water without sinking, and they also get judged for like presentation. It's just so that's my afternoon today. It's going to be awesome.
Okay, I want to see pictures.
Okay.
I love it. I love it. That's great. Today, we have a question from a listener who we'll call Over My Head. Here it is.
Hi. I have a question about fear and water. About 2 summers ago, I went whitewater rafting on the Poudre River with my husband and a friend in a small raft called a mini-me. I've been rafting quite a few times, but never in this small of a boat on the Poudre. I've fallen out of bigger boats on desert rivers and done fine. I've even pulled people back into the boat who have fallen out in the Poudre, but up until that day, I had never fallen into the Poudre. We were having a good time, and then our boat hit a rock, and my friend and I toppled into the river, but my partner stayed in the boat. I was shocked by the cold river and how terrified I was. I felt paralyzed, even though I used to be a lifeguard and rescued people. It was so different than other rivers I'd fallen in. My friend and I got back into the boat, and my husband soon started yelling paddle commands at us because we were coming up on another Class 4 rapid. After thinking, gee, I'm glad we fell out of the boat, that will never happen again, we fell out again. This time I couldn't see my friend, and I was really afraid something had happened to her. But in the end, we were on either side of a cliff where we'd gotten ashore. So I haven't rafted since then. Rafting is really important to my partner. So important it was in his wedding vows. I'm wondering if you have any tips for me on overcoming a scary water experience like this. I want to raft again, and we do have a rafting trip planned for later this summer on a bigger desert river. But I would like to go on the nearby Poudre again and have some strategies for being brave. Thanks for any advice you can give me. I love Nature Fix.
So that's the question that Over My Head sent us. And Angus, you actually spoke with her after she sent this in.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to understand what this experience is really like for her, because I've kind of had similar experiences just from surfing and being really scared in big, heavy water. Over My Head told me that she'd fallen to rivers before, and this time just wasn't like any other time she'd been rafting.
We hit a boulder that was on our right side, and all of a sudden my friend was falling on top of me, and we rolled towards the middle of the river, and we both fell out. Of course, my husband stayed in the boat. He always seems to stay in the boat. And I was just so shocked when I fell in. The Poudre's really cold, and I remember struggling just to even breathe.
It reminds me a lot of experiences that I've had just wiping out in big waves. Your body doesn't belong to you anymore. It belongs to the water. And when you realize you have absolutely no control, that's where the fear comes in. And worse, the panic. She hasn't rafted for 2 years since this. And that's something that's kind of unusual for her, because I think what happened was this moment taught her a mortal fear of rapids. As we talked, she told us that she wanted to conquer this fear, not just so that she could enjoy the sport again, but also for her family. Over My Head's husband is a professional rafting guide, and he really wants to share this part of his life with her. But this fear is preventing her from doing that.
So this is my second marriage. And when I met my husband, it became clear to me that he's a guide. He guides beyond whitewater rafting, also does climbing guiding, and he leads a lot of caving trips also. And so I kind of felt like, well, this girl from Iowa is going to have to up the ante with being a badass outdoors woman. And so I picked up some sports. And I really did push myself out of my comfort zone some. So I was at a time where I was kind of redefining myself a little after getting divorced.
Yeah, so Over My Head started picking up other sports, not just rafting. She's done long, difficult hikes up big mountains in Colorado with friends. She started road biking, which she says that her husband thinks she's crazy to do. It seems like he might consider that more dangerous than the sports that he does, like rafting and climbing. Basically, she's been trying to turn herself into some kind of super badass outdoors woman. But this experience rafting on the Poudre has given her this visceral fear that she's been having trouble shaking. And I think maybe shook her image of herself as that kind of badass outdoors person.
And I know that my husband loves me for who I am and that I don't have to prove to him what I can do. But guiding and rafting are a huge part of who he is. And I know it makes him sad that I feel scared about rafting again with him.
Well, okay, so it really seems like there's a lot more at stake here. There's a lot more going on than just a fear of rafting.
Yeah, it sounds like that to me as well. But let's start with the question that Over My Head actually asked. And this question of how do you get over a fear after you've had this kind of traumatic experience that's left you so shaken and so rattled?
Yeah, for me, one thing that helps is to remember that the fear I have isn't always proportional to the danger that I'm actually in. When you're faced with this force of nature, it can seem so huge and massive that you just feel so insignificant next to it, like it could just wipe you out. But the truth is, rafting and surfing too aren't as dangerous as you might think that they are. People don't really die that often compared to other kinds of risks that we take all the time. Just to give you an example, I looked up some statistics from the National Safety Council and American Whitewater Association, or American Whitewater. In rafting, about 1 out of 250,000 people will die while doing the activity, as opposed to, you know, the classical example is motor vehicle accidents, and 1 out of 303 people will die in a car crash, according to the National Safety Council.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's
it's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. I mean, and driving is a risk that we all take all the time, especially if you live in a place where, you know, you need to drive to get to work or school or whatever. I did try to look up some fatality statistics for surfing, and I couldn't really find anything except that 1 out of 25,000 surfers will die from shark attacks.
So, I'm sorry, that's not actually funny. I don't know why I'm laughing.
I want you to know, as the local expert of the Poudre River, there are no sharks in the Poudre River. Sorry, I don't want to laugh. This isn't funny.
No, it's not funny. Sorry.
No, yeah, it's not. It's pretty, it can be pretty kind of scary, actually.
This is good to put it into perspective, though, Angus, because I think a lot of people, you know, they have these fears of flying or fears of, you know, surfing or what have you. And if you really look at the numbers, easier said than done, right? But if you look at the numbers, your brain might be able to wrap just a little bit of logic around it.
Yeah. I know it is easier said than done. You know, the feeling of terror it's visceral. It's hard to overcome. And just sort of the cold, hard logic isn't always enough to get yourself past that. But, you know, I mean, I guess there's other things that kind of help you get over the fear, too. The fear of doing kind of an extreme activity or just getting back out there again. For me, it was always about just loving the sport so much that I was ready to like swallow that fear and commit myself to the wave, commit myself to going back out again. I actually remember one time when I was surfing in California at Ocean Beach right in San Francisco, and this is like one of the gnarliest beach breaks in the country, probably not counting Hawaii, I guess. It's like, it's heavy, it's hollow. There's like super scary, like, not like, I guess necessarily scary, but just like super strong rip tides and longshore currents and things like that. I at some point, I remember when I was surfing, I actually felt like I was getting worse because I was too scared when I was at the crest of a wave to like paddle into it, because I would look down and see this massive drop in front of me and be like, oh god, and kind of like just like pull out. I just remember thinking like, I need to get over this fear, because otherwise I'm going to be holding myself back from getting into bigger surf and like more fun surf, really. I don't want to like miss out on that. And I've caught a wave like this before, and that was like such a great experience. And that feeling was something that I just wanted again. And the other thing was that logic did help. I just kind of thought like, what am I so afraid of? Like, what is the worst thing that can happen to me? And is that really so bad? You know, like I could get cut on my fins or something. I could drown, but then I'll be dead, so then it won't matter anyway. just
although
kidding.
that logic doesn't work quite as well if you have a family, though, which over my head does. But
that is
right.
True.
And you know, when you're taking risks, because this happens to me as a mother as well, and it's not that I want to play it safe. It's that you've got these other things. That's not for me. It's not just about me. And I know that over my head, you know, had talked about her son and her husband. So.
Yeah, but you kind of make this calculation like, this is worth it, you know, like it's worth the risks and the risk of, you know, again, like the risk of death or something, serious injury like that happening is not that high. And I kind of just calmed myself down and I paddled back out. I remember actually I got into the rip current and I let the rip current take me past the break, and then I paddled into a wave. I don't really remember how big it was, but I just like prepared myself. I thought like, do I need to do? Like, how do I need to angle my surfboard when I'm paddling into the wave? How do I need to position myself right so that I'm giving myself the best odds to catch this wave and make it? And I paddled into this wave and I remember sliding down the face of it and everything was going perfectly right. And I looked up and I saw the curve of the wave just like sort of like just like spiraling in front of me almost. I remember like the crest was like foam was like flicking off the lip of the wave back into the wind, and it was just one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And it only lasted for a few seconds, and then I think I fell off. But I mean, I did fall off. I fell off like just a couple of seconds after that, but it was awesome, and I was totally fine afterwards, and that really helped me sort of just get back out there again and again.
So, it kind of sounds like there's a couple of different tactics that you use. That one is just reminding yourself that the odds are actually in your favor here. Like, it's not as dangerous as it feels like it is in the moment. One is just sort of concentrating on technique. Like, okay, this is like mechanically is probably the wrong word, but logistically, like, this is what I have to do in order to get through this successfully.
Yeah, exactly. The technique.
Right. And then, but then it also does seem like one of the big aspects, at least for you, is reminding yourself how much you actually want this, like how much you actually love this sport. And so in a moment where it has totally terrified you, just thinking like, no, actually, this is something I really love and this is something I want again, and holding on to that seems like that's a really powerful tool.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, when I talked to Over My Head, she wasn't enthusiastic about getting back in the boat to chase that feeling like I do, or, you know, snowboarders I know do, or other surfers I know do. Like, she isn't addicted maybe or needing that experience of rafting in and of itself, regardless of what these risks are. Do you really want, like, do you want to raft again? Is this something that you honestly want for yourself?
I really like going on trips with my family and my friends for rafting. If I could do it all on Class 3 Rapids, I'd be okay with that. I know that I'm probably in more danger when I drive to the river than when I'm actually on the river, but I think I need to overcome that control part of it all. And just be better prepared for collecting myself when I do fall in the river. And maybe by practicing that a little bit, or, you know, doing some shorter, easier things before the big trip, that will ease some of those fears I have.
Yeah.
So, Angus and Becky, what do you make out of what she just said there?
I think that she doesn't want to raft again out of a deep personal need to raft. There's another reason why she wants to do this.
Yeah, I think that pause, several pauses before she answered, is pretty telling. You know, remember, she told us, I know it makes him sad that I feel scared about rafting again with him. She was saying that about her husband, and that rafting is an important part of his life. So, yeah, to me, it seems like she might be rafting for her husband, not necessarily herself.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that that definitely seems to be part of it. I think it almost, it might almost be a little bit more nuanced than that. Because when we say it like that, like she's rafting for her husband, not for herself, it sort of, I don't know, that doesn't sound very good. That sounds like, oh, she's not being an independent woman, blah, blah, blah. And I do think there probably is a sense of wanting to please him and make him happy and be the woman that he wants her to be. But I kind of think there's more to it. I mean, over my head, it seems like you want to love this sport because you love your husband. Like, you genuinely want to share his passion. And it's just maybe you don't actually love it.
Yeah, and I wanted to clarify what I said before, because I know where over my head's coming from. You know, she said that earlier line about this girl from Iowa needs to up the ante to be an outdoors woman. There does seem to be a need to prove herself just a little bit. And man, I've been there. I've done that. I totally get it over my head. I had an outdoorsy, adventurous fiance. I was even born in Iowa, and I was divorced with kids going into a second marriage. So I really, really get it. And after my divorce, I was a single mom with two young boys, and I had such a loss of identity. So I tried a few new things in the outdoors, and I found that the pull to the outdoors to do those new things, to kind of strike out and create this new identity for myself, was pretty powerful. And I'm really glad that I did it. I ended up exploring some cool things like backpacking, and I even tried rafting, and I was hiking some 14ers and other stuff. And that's actually how I met my fiance 6 years later, through a hiking and social group that we were both a part of. And even though that's how we met, I started to question whether or not I was badass enough for him. I think, yeah, so I think there was something about also being a mother that made me feel slightly boring and frumpy and kind of safe. You know, we talked about before about those calculated risks. When you have a child at home or a couple of children at home, it really changes the game substantially. And so anyway, there was no way that I wanted my partner to think of me that way, as boring, as frumpy, as safe. So I ended up doing some outdoor activities with my fiance that didn't always align with how I wanted to really spend my time in the outdoors. And Willa, like you said, I wanted to love the things that he loved because I loved him. You know, so
yeah, and that's kind of a noble goal, really. I mean, you can't fault that. That's kind of beautiful.
For sure. And I love it. You know, a perfect example, my partner loved rock climbing, and he loved bushwhacking, like off route, coming down a mountain. And I went along with it to make him happy because these activities were really fun for him. And I wanted to share his passions to bring us closer. I thought that would really bring us closer. And I wanted to be part of his world. You know, it's really exciting to have this partner who's a badass, kind of adventure-driven person, and that world is really exciting. And deep down, I thought, if I said no to these activities, then again, he might see me as boring and ordinary and even maybe less desirable. So my motivation to be a badass was to be seen as a badass in the eyes of my partner, and therefore be more desirable. And I thought it would bring me closer to him.
Did it?
No, you know, it had nothing to do with my inner growth at that point. I kept participating in the activities I didn't like, and I didn't really tell him the whole truth about how I was feeling about it. And I would feel terrible because I dreaded some of these activities. And then my partner would feel terrible because he could see that I wasn't having a good time, and he thought he was the cause of it. So that made him feel bad. And so instead of bringing us closer, I really think that by continuing to do these activities that I didn't like going rock climbing together, it put more distance between us. So
the takeaway is that, you know, it's okay to give each other some space, maybe to enjoy some different activities, you know, independently of each other, you know. And it's not that it's not only okay, but that I found it was much healthier.
It also sounds like, you know, part of the solution is really talking to each other and figuring out, you know, what is going to work for both of you. I mean, I know that over my head you said that you recently have been talking to your husband about this, and you're planning another rafting trip soon and been talking about that. But Becky, it sounds like, you know, there needs to be communication from the beginning and saying how you feel about these things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and as you continue to, if you truly want to explore this, explore rafting again, and this is something that's important for you because you want to do this with your son and your family and your friends and your husband, then definitely that conversation needs to happen. And I think that it's really helpful to position it as, how am I doing this for myself? And that's where I kind of get back to that original comment that I made of, am I doing this out of obligation for others because I should be doing it? This is what it means to be a badass wife to a badass guy. Or would I like to do this because this is something I'd like to, this is a challenge I'd like to overcome. This is something I think could be really fun and I really enjoy it, or that I could explore it on a different level. These conversations, the inner conversations as well as the external conversations with your partner, I think are really key here.
And I think the one can bleed into the other. So something that starts out of almost a sense of obligation, or you know, this desire to do what your partner loves doing, can turn into something that you love for yourself. It's just a question of how you go about that. Because I don't want this to sound like, oh, you shouldn't go rafting anymore. I don't think that's the point here. I think it's a question of how you approach it. I mean, I had an experience a few years ago with a relationship and rock climbing that sort of illustrates this. So I was dating a guy at the time who was a really intense rock climber. He like lived in a van and just would travel around from climbing place to climbing place, and had just totally organized his life around rock climbing.
Willow, did he live in a van down by the river? It had to be asked. Somebody had to ask.
More like
it.
He lived in a van up by the crags, but
I am divorced.
But it was so. This was so appealing to me, and I loved that he had created the life that he wanted to live. Like, he had built his life the way he wanted it to be, and it was built around this thing that he just really loved, which was rock climbing. And at the time, I was a total newbie to rock climbing. I mean, I had gone out a couple of times with friends, but I was not a climber by any stretch of the imagination. But it was something that I wanted to do with him, in part because I wanted to prove that I could be the badass outdoors woman, and, like, you know, I wanted to get to the point where I could keep up with him and where we could go on adventures together and share this thing. And partly it was also just because I was intrigued. You know, there was so much that I loved and respected about him, and so I wanted to share this passion that he had. And so I remember he took me out climbing, and it was kind of awful, and it wasn't his fault. It was my fault, but it was, I had such a hard time, and I struggled so much, and I felt so like under the microscope, because he was, you know, obviously watching what I was doing. That's how climbing works. And I just flailed and struggled and didn't have a good time, and I didn't feel strong, and I didn't feel badass, and I didn't love it. It just was, I mean, all of the things that I was hoping this would be just weren't there. And I remember asking him, you know, at what point did climbing become fun for you? Like, at what point did it stop being just hard and miserable and start being fun? And he said, Willow, I've just loved climbing from the first time I did it. And I thought about that and I was just like, well, gee, I don't know. Like, maybe I'm just not cut out for this. But what happened then, so we ended up splitting up. And after we broke up, some friends, a girlfriend of mine, who also climbs a lot, suggested that she and I go climbing together. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. Like, I'm not really enjoying this. And she was like, you know, I love climbing and I love you. And I think you actually would love climbing. Like, let's go out and do something that's fun. And so she took me out climbing and it was fun. And I felt so much more at ease and so much more just peaceful and like this was something I was doing for me when I was out with her. And climbing has now become a huge passion for me. I mean, I'm still a beginner at this, but I've started buying my own gear and I get out as much as I can, and it has become. I mean, Angus, I think you used the word addiction earlier, and it feels a little bit like that. Like, oh, when can I get out the next time? And so it has become, yeah, right. I mean, it's become my thing, even though I pursued it largely for this guy for a while. And like at that time, it wasn't my thing. It was like, I'm doing this for him. But it has become my thing now. And so, you know, I don't know what, maybe it's something that is worth doing. Maybe rafting is something that's worth doing with other people for a little while. Like, maybe don't just do it with your husband. Maybe do it with friends. Maybe pursue it on your own to see whether it is something that you are going to come to love for you as opposed to something that you are going to do for him.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I think that's really, you know, well said, Willow. You know, and sometimes you might never love it. You know, and that's okay too. I ended up trying ice climbing on my own and ended up feeling pretty meh about it, you know, but it was okay because I decided that on my own terms.
Yeah, I mean, there are also, if you decide that rafting is not for you, it's not something that you want to do, there are other things that you can do with your family, like other fun outdoor activities.
Well, and I'd like to say, you know, if you're going to do rafting again, and you mentioned that you wanted to, you want to face this fear, maybe take some baby steps to build your confidence at first. I think you would even mention that. Maybe just do kind of some smaller things, some slower things at first. And there's actually a lot of research that shows the effectiveness of exposure therapy when it's when you apply it in an incremental way. So I think it's kind of those baby steps are important versus going and like jumping back in the pooter in May or June when it's at its peak. But I think those baby steps are key.
And it's that kind of exposure can really help build your skill up too. I mean, it sounds a little bit like the last time you went rafting, you were out of your skill depth just a bit in terms of your paddling skill and your rafting skill. There's really no shame in knowing what your limits are and being like, okay, this, like, I'm not ready to try to cross a class 4 rapid again until you feel a little bit more confident with your paddling ability.
Yeah. So baby steps.
My feeling is over my head, you are a badass. I want you to hear that I see you and number one, for you just sharing this story with us, you're an absolute badass. Not to mention that you went swimming twice on that rafting trip in a mini-me in the Poudre in class 4 rapids. And you've helped to pull people back in when you've been rafting before. With or without rafting, darling, you are an absolute badass. So I want you to hear that.
Yeah. And I also think it's worth reiterating that it is okay not to love some of the things that your partner loves. Like, the success of your marriage and your family is not contingent on you loving all of the same things.
Yeah, and to that point, you know, giving each other space to do the different activities that you each are really drawn toward. I think that's really important and really healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Let us know what you decide about your rafting trip in August over my head. I'm super curious, and let us know how it goes one way or the other, whether you decide to go or you do go. And good luck.
Yeah, and thank you for sending your question to us. We really appreciate it. And yeah, stay stoked.
Good luck over my head. You got it.
That's it for this episode. If you'd like to submit a question for us to consider on the Nature Fix, just send me an email. My email address is willow@outtherepodcast.com. You can send us a voice memo with your question. That's our favorite because then everyone gets to hear your voice on the show. Or if you're not comfortable with that, you can just email your question in written form. Either way, we very much look forward to hearing from you. If you're enjoying The Nature Fix, and out there in general, I hope you'll consider supporting the show. We are a small, independent production, and even though this is a full-time endeavor for me, it's nowhere close to paying a living wage yet. We do this show because we love it and because we love you, but we also need to pay the bills. Every dollar of listener support really does help. If you'd like to make a gift to Out There, just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click support. Our advice columnists are Becky Jensen and Angus Chen. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking. And our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.